Well, tonight's shapeshifter has had a varied career. Maybe to say that he's had a varied career, maybe understating it a bit. Before we talk as to why anybody in their right mind would accept the job of Chief Financial Officer at SAA, let's do a little bit of a history lesson into the life and times of Bob Head, who has just been appointed as Chief Financial Officer at South African Airways. He's in the studio with us tonight. Would it be a fair observation to suggest that in your younger days, Bob Head, you weren't quite sure what it was that you were going to do? I mean, farm working, gardening, even making barbed wire fencing, which you are a self-proclaimed expert at.
Absolutely, Bruce. So those early career experiences actually financed my vinyl collection and a little bit of alcohol as well.
So were you a student at the time, or was this where you were you genuinely trying to find your way in the world?
No, I was at school. I started work when I was 13. My father was strongly of the view that I should support myself.
Okay, shelf stacking. You were the first ever male cashier at the Sainsbury's, in the very famous town that people know because of the sport that spawned the town, and that's a town called Rugby in England. You worked in a warehouse, you worked with molten metal as a barman, all kinds of jobs that people who are lucky enough to have had jobs in their younger days would have done one or some of those. You did all of them.
Yes, I have a very large vinyl collection, Bruce.
And do you still play those vinyls?
Absolutely.
Is music better on vinyl than it is downloaded?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, really. It's just nice. The thing that's nice about vinyl is the cover.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that artistry is kind of getting lost a little bit. You then go off to Oxford and you do your classic PPE degree and then follow that on with accounting. Was that always the plan?
No. I was of a left-wing persuasion and I wanted to be a trade union researcher. So, but studying politics, I got rather sick of the dogma. So I then decided I didn't want to do that. And my father sent me to a careers analyst who looked at your abilities and what you wanted to do. And everything was terrible. So if you plotted physics up one axis and music up the other, what I wanted to do was mega on music and nil on physics. And what I was good at was good on physics and bad on music. So I was always wrestling with everything was just didn't quite fit. So this chap said, go and train as an accountant and work it out later.
And you practiced as an accountant for a bit, Coopers and Lybrand. You then broke into financial services for the first time, and probably the most famous insurance company in the United Kingdom, other than Old Mutual, Prudential, had a bank called Egg, and it was a wonderful time in global banking. There was this newfangled thing called the internet, which may or may not change everything. And you were part of a disruptive revolution in financial services as a younger man.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely fabulous. So I'd never done banking before, and I started Egg with a chap called Mike Harris, who's probably my best boss ever. And we had loads of consultants come along to actually assess our business case, and we got told that either I'd over-egged, excuse the pun, the numbers by a factor of 4 or 6. I think the closest was 2, and we achieved our 5-year business volumes in 7 months. So it was great.
Whatever happened to Egg? Because does it still exist?
No, it was bought by Citigroup from Prudential, and in the credit crunch it imploded. So basically the credit cards went off to Barclaycard. The fund management business went off to Fidelity, the share trading went off to Charles Stanley, and the savings and loan business went to the Yorkshire Building Society.
It may be gone, but I mean, what it represented and what it stood for was that early revolution in banking. It was part one of those early banks that did change the world of financial services for good.
Yeah, there's a wonderful book called Dotcom Heroes, the 200 Dotcom Heroes, which was published around about 2000, just before the crash. And it's quite funny when you thumb through that book now, most of them are gone.
But they did the work. They did that early work. They laid the groundwork.
Absolutely. And it was very difficult to spot the winners and losers at that time.
Mm. And from Egg, you then went on to the Co-op, which is another supermarket business in the United Kingdom. They're multifaceted, of course, but their high street presence is through supermarkets. And they had a financial services business called Smile, which was the next venture. At what point did Old Mutual find you, though?
Well, I was at Smile, and Smile's part of the cooperative movement, which is kind of a funny name for it because it doesn't cooperate and it doesn't move, or at least it didn't in those days. And Smile was probably my best working experience with a shareholder that was probably my worst working experience. We used to have a phrase, all possible help short of actual assistance. I wasn't very happy with what was being said to the board, and so I was always taught you resign if you want to communicate to people further up the chain. So I resigned. Jim Sutcliffe, who was the chief executive of Old Mutual at that time, I'd worked for him twice before.
And, at Prudential,
At the Prudential, and so when he said, come on down, it was very difficult to resist. He's one of my favorite bosses as well.
I mean, Jim Sutcliffe, a very calm individual, certainly on the surface. I've never worked with him, but certainly observing him under duress and doing very well at it. But what was it that appealed to you about the proposition Jim gave you? Because did he acknowledge to you at the time that this massive global expansion that Old Mutual had embarked upon was just simply not working, or was he still trying at that stage to make it work?
No, he was looking for a UK acquisition at that time, which would have helped Old Mutual because it was generating tax losses in the UK, so you could effectively arbitrage the tax man by generating profits. So we worked on a few potential acquisitions, which we didn't pursue because, in my view, the risk was far higher than the reward.
Okay, but at this point, though, in your time at Old Mutual, you become something of a troubleshooter. You start being deployed to every battlefront where Old Mutual has a problem. At what point did you know that you were good at that thing? Because you become something of the internal Mr. Fix-It, and then your other jobs suggest that you've sort of stuck to that particular mantra.
I think that starts all the way back in 1985 when I was at Coopers. So I proved that a company in Ireland was bust, and then like putting Humpty Dumpty back together again, something called the Insurance Corporation of Ireland. So I've always been, I guess I've got attention deficit disorder or something like that, and I need something that's on fire and gets me up and gets me going. So when I joined the Prudential, before I did Egg, we were in 38 countries. By the time I finished, it was less than 10, so I was the doctor death.
I mean, is that part of the turnaround job? I mean, is that what is required of a turnaround specialist?
I think there are big issues and little issues. So we have to sort out the funding of SAA. Obviously, we have to get income up and costs down, which is going to be painful. But there's an awful lot that we can do on... I'll give you a silly example. So I have a very nice lady called Carol who looks after me. To give her access to my diary took 6 approvals, and none of them was mine, which is stupid.
you've already fallen out with your new employer in terms of the bureaucracy that you face, and you're thinking, I know how I can save some costs.
I haven't fallen out with my new employer because I think Vian is a good guy, and he understands what needs to actually be done. Mm. And basically, he needs to actually build a great team to actually do it.
Well, we'll talk about SAA in just a bit, but you neatly picked up, of course, on as you would, on where I'm going with the discussion. But you go around through Old Mutual. You are working with Jim Sutcliffe, who's been one of your favorite bosses ever. They make you strategy director. Not long after that, they make you head of HR, and suddenly you're HR director of a FTSE 100 listed company, and you've never worked in HR in your life.
I mean, it's a very good place to start in HR.
but it's that kind of thing where you've never been afraid, it would seem, to take yourself, add some weights to your ankles, and then throw yourself in the deep end.
There's 3 things I like in life. So we've talked about music. I like using my brain, and I like people. And I think when I look at when a company's in trouble, The big guys always seem to get the big payoffs, and if you're lucky, you get a 2 weeks of service per year you're there, if you're one of the little people. And I come from a family of postmen and telephone engineers, and telephone engineers is basically a posh electrician. And I hate the fact that the big guys get the payoff and the small guys suffer, and that really gets on my nerves.
Yeah. I mean, you say that one of your strengths is your ability to hold people accountable, motivate them to perform, and stay friends.
Mm.
Which, I mean, that's an unusual skill set.
Well, you have to make choices. So one of my favourite interview questions is to people, if you had to summarise your culture, ethos and values, you just give me words I can't experience. So choose a film or television programme so I can experience that working environment. My answer is, no, there isn't a correct answer, but my answer is MASH. So I love MASH, I love the community, I love the fact that they're for each other, but there's still a very, very serious job to be done. And it's a mixture of this sort of latent pinko view of the world, coupled with an almost Nazi-like enforcement. If anyone abuses it, then they have to go.
Yeah, I mean, and you certainly don't subscribe to that sort of philosophy. You then South Africa. Old Mutual. Old Mutual at the time has got some big problems. Old Mutual in South Africa isn't working brilliantly. Nedbank is in serious trouble. Nedbank is dying. I mean, 2004, they do what is probably the largest rights issue to date in that particular business. I think it was, what, 6 or 7 billion rands worth of rights issue.
7 billion.
7 billion rands worth of rights issue. It was touch and go for a bit as we had the small banks crisis that spawned Capitec, as we were just talking about a while back. Banks were falling over. We had Samba, we had BOE, and Nedbank was next in line. Old Mutual stepped into the breach, but then needed to raise some money. And they said, here's a 6-month job for you. You can be chief financial officer at Nedbank. And off you went, a bit like, I don't know, Tigger into the valley of death.
Well, actually, it was actually Nedbank that requested me. It was quite interesting because Old Mutual and Nedbank had quite a distant relationship. So in the 30 years Old Mutual had owned more than half the shares, only one person had ever gone from Old Mutual Nedbank Exco, and only one person had gone from the Nedbank Exco to Old Mutual, and I was both of them.
I'm beginning to spot the problem, yeah.
Yeah. Charles Dickens at the start of Tale of Two Cities had a great phrase: it was the best of times and it was the worst of times. So what we were facing was certainly the worst of times. But everybody just bent their backs. I mean, for 3 months, the first 3 months, it was 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the reason it was 16 is because we decided we needed 8 hours to actually wash, eat, sleep, and wash and change. And it was absolutely fantastic. It was wonderful working with Tom and the team. And of course, we were successful.
And then you would have handed over the chief financial officer job to Mike Brown, who's now the chief executive at Nedbank, which is still, I think, benefiting from the work that was done on those 16-hour days.
Yeah, and I've staked my career twice on Mike Brown. He is an absolutely superb operator. So they wanted someone who was outside Nedbank to be the finance director, which I fought tooth and nail and won. And then when Tom was coming up to retirement, I also fought tooth and nail to actually get Mike appointed, because he's a superb operator.
Interesting.
As was Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. When you, somewhere amongst all of this, you come up with a bright idea, because I think you were the originator of the Dino King scenarios, and for many people would have forgotten about the Dino King scenarios, but you got 30 of the brightest and the most capable and connected minds in the country together to say, what is the future of South Africa? Create some scenarios. And they created these scenarios, and you were certainly instrumental in that process.
Yeah, that was one of the most amazing times of my life. I met these people that in the days when we used to protest against apartheid, those were the heroes. And so I met a whole bunch of people that It was a bit like meeting rock stars, which was fabulous. And wonderful things happened. So I have a very complicated spreadsheet somewhere to try and actually get different ages, genders, backgrounds, what people actually did for a living to get a diverse bunch of people. And watching them to come together and produce what was produced was great. And I went to Old Mutual and Ned Bank for the funding, which they gave me. And it was fabulous. And the big sadness I really have is if you look at the National Development Plan, which is a fantastic document, the question one always should ask a government, and I suppose I better be a bit careful because now I suppose
you are a civil government. You are a civil servant, yes.
Is how many requests is government making a civil society, business, the unions, anyone who's got capacity to help increase the capacity of the state? And I think the National Development Plan is definitely worth another read and have a think about how to increase the capacity of the state.
I've got no doubt that somewhere deep in a basement somewhere, somebody is dusting it off and looking at it again and maybe even refreshing and revising it. I certainly hope that that is the case because, yep, it is a noble document. You did lots of jobs for Old Mutual. How did you end up at SARS?
Well, I used to sit above Ned Bank, Old Mutual and Mutual and Federal here in South Africa.
Because they put you in charge of South Africa.
What they did. And then I was then, to use the ANC term, recalled to go and sort the Scandia out. So I went and sorted out Scandia. Jim obviously went in that time, and I missed him, and decided once I'd done Scandia, I would resign, which I did. And then Previn Gordon got to hear that, and I'd known Previn doing various odd jobs for him because he uses the private sector quite a lot. He heard I was free and thought it would be a very good idea if someone from the private sector went into SARS. And that struck me as such a funny idea, you really couldn't resist.
And you stuck it out for quite some time. You did leave in 2013. Were there particular reasons why you left? Was it just the end?
No,
of,
I left in 2015, actually.
15? So, quite recently. Yeah,
so I initially worked for Open Magashula, who was a fantastic boss, as commissioner. I was called special advisor. I was quite pleased with the special as opposed to senior. then I had Ivan Pillay as the commissioner, who I probably listeners know he keeps on getting associated with
the rogue unit,
and the rogue unit and all that. I would leave my wallet with Ivan. I would let my daughter stay with Ivan. I think he's the most fantastic, amazing man with a great history. And then I, when Ivan was replaced. I then had Tom Moyani, who I was initially impressed with, and then decided I didn't want to be there anymore.
Yeah. Why? Yeah, you go quiet and you go and live in the countryside and you consult and you do things. Who gave you the call to say, come along and help us turn around SAA?
So there are three directors who were appointed back in November. So JB Magwaza is the chairman, who I've known for 15 years.
He was at Nedbank, yeah.
Correct. And Lita Fukuda, who is also at Nedbank. Martin Kingston, who's the guy in charge of Rothschilds down here, who I've also known for 15, 16, 17 years. And I was coming to an Alexander Forbes board meeting where I'm a director. And as I was waiting in the exceptionally long queue for foreigners, to come in the country, I received a text from Martin that said, are you ever in South Africa and do you fancy a little project?
That little project is to try and rescue SAA. Is it salvageable?
Yes. I mean, it has certain issues. So if you look at the airline market, which I'm not an expert on, then the hubs are becoming more and more important. So the problem that SAA has straight away is that we're at the end of Africa and there's not too much to the south we're going to fly to. So it's not going to be a hub. So it has to reinvent its proposition, I think. At the same time, it being part of government and the dear old PFMA, which is a piece of legislation which is to help procurement be transparent, But it has the effect of everyone running scared that they're not going to comply with it, and the bureaucracy is immense on the back of it. Cutting through all of that sort of bureaucracy at the same time as increasing productivity and improve the proposition is the way out of the situation that we find ourselves.
Where are you now? Are you at SAA yet? Have you started? Have you been there? Have you had day one?
I've been there 3 weeks. My wife, while I was waiting for my work permit, my wife came down and found us a house and got us all moved in with rented furniture in 6 days flat. So I'm now living in South Africa. I'm quite looking forward to Monday, actually. My dogs arrive.
Oh, excellent. Good. As long as that's a bit of normalcy returning. How long's the project? Is it on the Never Never? Or?
So I have a six-month contract. That's what we've agreed, and I will definitely be there for the 6 months.
Can you achieve much in those six?
Well, in Nedbank, we achieved quite a lot in 6 months.
But it's a different environment altogether. I mean, Nedbank had its back against the wall. You had a group of like-minded individuals working toward the same goal. Do you have that squad in place at SAA yet?
No. So Vianney's been there since November. Yeah. He's building his team around him, and there's a lot to do to actually build that team, get everybody facing the same way. Jim Sutcliffe always had a good phrase, which is one canoe. Everyone's got to be in the one canoe, and you don't go anywhere unless you're all paddled together.
The trouble with this canoe is it's taken on water, and somebody lost the cup to bail out the water, haven't they?
I don't think that's quite fair. I mean, this sort of situation. So I always say a terrible team in any situation is terrible. Yeah. A brilliant team in a great situation is okay, but a brilliant team in a tough situation, that's the thing that is absolutely amazing. I mean, basically, relationships get forged in that white heat of the problems you're actually facing. And I think that's exactly what we have to do at SAA. Some of it is quite simple, you know, getting easy access for a secretary to look at your diary.
One small thing. Yes. Yes, Bob Head, we wish you luck. We need you to succeed. All of us need you to succeed. We can't keep bailing out SAA. We want it to succeed. It is a vital part of South Africa. And we wish you luck in navigating it and building the teams and helping Vuyani Jahana, the new chief executive at SAA, the board, which has been appointed the first time SAA has had some hope for a very, very long time. And Bob Head, we wish you luck with it. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.